The tank is full, and we're moving through the Arizona Hour with Sanderson Ford and Rosie on the house.
You must have been something before electricity, huh?
Is that Rodney Dangerfield? Yeah. What's his line?
From Caddyshack. He walks in and he tells the judge's wife, "Hey, you really must have been something before electricity."
And we're talking electricity this morning. It took me, I think, about a year and a half of asking, who can I get in the studio to talk about what electricity is? And I would ask everybody I knew. And finally, someone from APS calls me and says, "I've got the perfect person for you, Jacob Tetlow, Vice President of Transmission and Distribution." Jacob, thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Hang on. Let me turn your mic on.
Gary?
There you go.
There we go.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yes, absolutely. We're happy to have you. Okay, so we talked about the different fuel sources for making electricity.
Right.
I think we skipped hydroelectric.
We did. So let me come back to
that
one.
That's pretty significant for Arizona, right?
It is. You know, we have the Colorado River all along our state. While APS doesn't own any of those hydro plants, we certainly do get the energy from a lot of hydro plants, from both along the Colorado River and up in the northwest of the United States. So part of what we do that maybe most people don't realize is while we do have a lot of power plants to make sure we can keep the lights on, we also participate in a market to make sure we're finding the most efficient energy we can find. So we'll buy renewables, we'll buy hydropower, whatever source of energy is the most efficient at the time. We participate in an intra-hour market where we literally can buy power like 15 minutes ahead of time. And we can figure out what the cheapest resource out there for our customers is. So we actively participate in the hydro space as well.
Did y'all just hear what he said? So they're reading what they expect the electric demand to be in the next 15 minutes. And the power's out there kind of just existing on this grid. And you just say, "I'll take a chunk of this produced by wind. I'll take a little bit of this by solar. Oh, I want some of that natural gas juice too."
That's exactly right.
That's unbelievable. And so that Aunt Martha can turn her toaster oven on in Sun City.
Yeah, we're doing everything we can to keep that bill just as inexpensive as possible for the value we think we bring to the customer.
Okay, so we have all these different fuel sources. Run it through it again. Natural gas, coal, hydroelectric, one methane plant, I think, in town. Yep. What did I miss?
Solar.
So you got solar. You have a couple different forms of solar. You got photovoltaic solar. You have concentrated solar. So you can use it thermal or you can use the radiant energy of the sun.
Okay.
You've also got wind energy. You've got biomass in some cases where people will literally, you know, burn trees or leftover slash out of the forest to make. Really, if you think about it, all you got to do is make some steam or heat something up or have any kind of moving energy source. Because if you can spin something, you can make electricity.
And now we're back to magnetism and gravity.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
What are you spinning?
Generally, what you're really spinning is an electromagnet. So you think about a big shaft, a big long piece of what looks like a giant pipe, and it's got a bunch of copper around it, and you energize it, and then you spin it. And when you spin it, you create that magnetic field, and you push that magnetic field through a whole bunch of copper wires, and out of those wires flows a whole bunch of electricity.
Why does it have to be copper? Why can't it be recycled plastic?
Because copper is a much better conductor than plastic. It could be aluminum, though.
Okay. All right. So we're back to magnetism and gravity.
That's right. Yeah. And everything comes from the sun ultimately, right?
Why don't we just drop this subject and start talking about dark matter?
We'll give it a try if you like.
Holy cow. So we're spinning copper around a pipe. It electromagnetically starts these particles moving, and then we send it in a specific direction. We don't want it to come backwards on us.
That's right. One of the things that most people don't realize about electricity is it's like it's a commodity, right? You just make lots of electricity, lots of kilowatt hours. But the unique thing about our commodity is you have to make the exact amount your customers need at the exact moment that they need it.
That's mind-blowing. That's absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, just standing in the control room of Palo Verde is mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's crazy how much equipment's out there, huh?
That's absolutely crazy. And dials and gauges. I mean, you think NASA's complicated. This Palo Verde, NASA has got nothing on Palo Verde.
I'm with you.
I mean, it's really phenomenal. So you've got all this juice flying through, you call them lattice towers, the big, giant, enormous ones.
Big high-voltage power lines.
And how much juice are you sending down those lines?
So we measure in terms of megawatts. And so, you know, people usually think of watts on a light bulb, a 60-watt light bulb. And then, you know, there's 1,000 watts, that makes a kilowatt. And 1,000 kilowatts makes a megawatt. So we talk in terms of megawatts. And our system is about a 7,000-megawatt system. So that's a combination of power plants and energy purchases on the market. And we bring all that stuff together to make sure that we can serve that 7,000-megawatt load at that hottest day in June, July, or August. Our system is built for that hottest day that comes along.
Romy, how many watts does it take to push a DeLorean into the future?
1.21. Gigawatts.
1.21 gigawatts? How am I going to generate that kind of power?
So we're sending this massive amount of energy and power down these ginormous transmission lines that go through some of the – I would have liked to have been a transmission line builder. You end up in some of the prettiest places in all of – and remote places in all of Arizona.
You do, because they traverse all over the state of Arizona. We have about 6,000 miles of those high-voltage power lines woven across the state.
Question for you. In the past, you know, years ago, they used to talk about like rolling brownouts and stuff from not having enough power. They don't seem to talk about that anymore. Are we just in a place where we don't need to worry? Or
That's a great observation. We don't talk about that too often because we do a really good job of making sure we have enough power generation combined with the markets that we all participate. Arizona happens to be connected to California, New Mexico, and part of what we call the Western Energy Coordinating Council, or part of the WEC region. And so we actually work together with our neighboring utilities to make sure we're all working together to make sure that there's enough power to go around. If you know, you ever get to a time of a brownout, there must be some pretty big problems out there.
We really take that for granted, don't we?
Oh.
Flip that switch.
Oh, I want to get back to Mimi's toaster in Sun City. So we've got all this ginormous power being transmitted through from our sources, our generating plants, down 6,000 miles of wires. How does that get down to the size she needs it just to warm up a bagel?
So we take those 6,000 miles of the high-voltage stuff, and we interconnect it with about 430 substations. So those substations are basically just places where we change the voltage and interconnect the power line. So you get to those 430 substations, and they then feed out to about 29,000 miles of distribution wires. Those are the wires you see in the neighborhood, the 35-foot pole. In a lot of cases, it's underground. But it's the one that's going out to all the neighborhoods. And then you take that little transformer. It sits up on top of a pole. It looks like a water jug, like an igloo water jug, maybe a couple feet tall, foot and a half around. And that takes it down to that 120 volts that you actually need to use to make that toaster work. The reason we use high voltage on the front end is because you can move a lot more power a lot more efficiently if you do it at a high voltage. You don't need giant wires. You can make the wires much smaller if you have high voltage.
And voltage... To talk about electricity, you've got to talk voltage, amperage,
yep,
and wattage, right?
Yeah, power. Power is wattage. And sometimes we throw a little resistance in that conversation.
Ohms.
That's right.
Okay. So what's that formula?
Well, power is equal to current times voltage. So if we want lots of power, we jack the voltage up, then you have less current. And current is what creates, it gives you, when you have resistance, as you up the current, you have more resistance. And if you have more resistance, you have more losses. And we try to minimize those losses by saying, well, put in some real high voltage wires. You can move a whole bunch of power. And as you get closer to the customers, to energize the house, we get it down to that 120 volts, which makes it usable to the customer.
So you've got to run the voltage that high to keep the cables that are stretching this 6,000 miles down to a reasonable size.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So we take it from 500,000?
Yep. We start our highest is 500,000 volts.
No wonder those signs say high voltage on all those lattice towers. No wonder they say don't climb this tower.
Yeah, you definitely do not want to climb a tower ever.
Good night.
Do you have to constantly replace lines, or is that just, do they have a long life?
No, the light wires last a long time. There are some cases where we have some older copper wires that we're out changing out. But in general, you know, nowadays they make some pretty fancy wires. They'll have a steel core, and then they're wrapped with aluminum. So there's actually no copper in most of those wires.
So we then send it to the community substation and take it down from 500,000 to 12,000?
That's right, distribution.
And send that through the neighborhoods.
Yep.
Put it into the transformer and take it down to 120.
Yep.
And put it into your service electric service panel.
And that's what's got, that's what, well, we actually bring two legs of 120. So you ever get some 240 volt and you're doing your air conditioner, you're actually going from one hot leg to the other hot leg. That's how you get the 240 volts is phase to phase. But generally, what you think about in your outlet is just a single piece of that, one of the legs that comes to your house, and that's where you get the 120 volts.
As dangerous as it is, it's amazing. It's miraculous. It's as controllable and safe as it is.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff, isn't it?
It is. So at 120 volts through all the wires through your house, you hopefully don't want to ever see electricity. Right.
Pretty electrical storm, maybe, you know, lightning looks pretty cool.
Way up in the sky.
Yep. Far away.
But you see electricity in your home. It's arcing. And that's not anything you ever want to see. What is that arc?
That arc is basically the electricity finding some way to get to the earth, because electricity actually naturally wants to go from those wires. It wants to get back to the earth. Which you could kind of think of where it came from.
Well, see, now we're talking gravity again.
Yep. Has that that effect. And so electricity wants to find a path to ground. It wants to say, hey, how do I get back to the earth? And so when you see that arc, that means that conductor, that energized wire, found some way to get back to the earth.
And you just want to make sure you're not in that circuit.
Yeah, that's right. But your toaster's doing the same thing. You put 120 volts into your toaster, and it goes through those little red wires in there that get nice and hot, and that's basically electricity on its way back to the earth. And you're using it on the way.
Same theory as a lightning bolt, right?
Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty much it. A lightning bolt is just static electricity from the cloud to a cloud or cloud to the earth.
And it really is amazing how safe it is, and we've come up with, you know, you had the two-prong back. You were talking about 1881, is that?
1886 is when APS started.
Phoenix Illumination Company?
That's correct.
Okay. So at that point, you're generating electricity, but there's nobody out there with a toaster oven or a television or a light bulb.
That's right. And it's been a long time, but back in the old days, APS was out there selling the appliances because people didn't really have anything to use electricity.
That's called supply side economics.
That's right.
So we've got this electricity, and now we talk about wireless transmission. I mean, it's electricity that is, it's magnetism, it's gravity that's driving all of this physics behind all of our wireless components as well.
That's right. Nowadays, you got fancy phone chargers in a new car where you don't even have to plug it in. It just has a magnetic field behind it.
How many radio waves are we walking through just going out into the backyard and watering our dogs?
That question, I'm not sure I know the answer, but I bet it's a big number.
Wow.
So I run along the canals, and I got transmission lines right above me. Should I be concerned?
No, there's a lot of studies that have been done to assess what the effects are. Kind of to Rosie's point, you know, there's magnetic fields all over the place. There's radio waves in the atmosphere. And there's a lot of studies to substantiate that there is not a health concern living near a high voltage line. You know, we put them up high enough to make sure that's a safe distance.
And what is the buzzing you can sometimes hear when you're close?
So we call that corona, actually. That's the technical term for it, but it's essentially it's almost like a static electricity. It sounds like static electricity, and it's basically current kind of leaking off the power lines, if you will, and what we call corona.
All right. We're going to keep you a little bit longer and finish wrapping this conversation. I'd keep you here all 4 hours. It's Rosie with Jacob Tetlow, Vice President of Transmission and Distribution for APS.